This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 241, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can hear the extended version of this episode if you join Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/AlienUFOPodcast. This week, I'm talking to Elizabeth Sabine about her book, Strange UFOs and Aliens in My Life. Elizabeth has had contact with strange aliens throughout her life. Hi, Elizabeth. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to talk about your book. It's called Strange UFOs and Aliens in My Life. Could we start off with your first memory? Could you tell us what happened there?
Okay. Well, my first memory is I was around 3 years old. And I remember I was sitting in the living room floor playing with my dolls or something. I don't remember anything before that because, you know, it wasn't significant. And my mom was sitting on the couch beside me, and my father came rushing in the front door and went straight across the living room to the back window and said to my mom, "Beat, come look out the window. Come here, quick." So mom, you know, got up slowly. He said, "Come on, hurry up. Come here. Come see this." So my mom got up and went to the back window. And of course, I was curious, so I get up and went to the back window. But I was so little, I couldn't see out the window. I was standing on my tippy toes with my hands on the ledge, trying to, like, on the windowsill, trying to pull myself up, but I couldn't see anything. And then I got this buzzing in my ears, this loud, loud buzzing. And I remember I turned around away from the window and put my hands over my ears and said out loud, "Oh no, it's going to happen again." So I think probably something happened before that, but I don't remember anything before that. But at that time, I said, "Oh no, it's going to happen again." And then I had this vision in my head, is the only way to describe it. It was sort of like, the best way I can say it is, it looked like bubbles. Like it looked like a group of bubbles connected by like a cord, like a silver cord or some kind of cord going like around them that connected them. And then they were sort of growing, like expanding and contracting. So I didn't know what that was, but it was like very clear. Like I can still to this day see it in my head. They were white bubbles. So the next thing I knew, I was waking up in the back porch, which is odd because, first of all, there was no way for me to get into the back porch because the door going to the outside was always locked on the inside. And the back door to the house that went into the back porch I couldn't reach the doorknob. So there was no way I could have gotten in myself. And even if I had have, there were two big steps going down, which I was very small for my age anyway, and I was only three. So I woke up in the back porch on my hands and knees with my face down on my hands. And I remember sitting up and looking, and there was, oddly, this character from the TV show that I watched when I was a kid called The Friendly Giant. And I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but it was about this giant, and there was this big giraffe puppet. And there was also this little chicken puppet that used to hang in a bag on the wall inside this Friendly Giant's castle. And the puppet's name was Rusty. And even the real puppet didn't really look like a chicken, but it was supposed to be a chicken. So I sat up on my knees and I saw the Friendly Giant there leaning against the back porch wall, which led into the woodshed, but there was a door. So he was leaning against that, and he was dressed like the Friendly Giant, and his face looked like the Friendly Giant, but he was like shorter than the Friendly Giant. And I thought, that's not a giant. That is not the Friendly Giant. He's way too small to be the Friendly Giant. And then, of course, I was thinking, I've always been logical. And so I was thinking, and besides, if that's the Friendly Giant, then where's Rusty, the puppet, you know, the chicken? And then as soon as I thought that, I saw Rusty the chicken materialize slowly. Like it gradually materialized hanging on the door that went into the woodshed from the back porch. But it wasn't the exact same bag, and it certainly wasn't the exact same chicken puppet. It didn't even look like it. It was like some weird thing. So I knew it wasn't, that it was some kind of trickery. And I kept getting like the impression in my mind that, no, this is a friendly giant, and this is Rusty. And I was saying like, no, it's not. But it was just like, it was being pushed on me. And so I got up and I thought, oh, well, if it is a puppet, then somebody must be manipulating it from behind the door. And I know that sounds weird that a three-year-old would think that way, but I've always been that way. So I walked over to it. And when I got up close to the so-called friendly giant, like I came up to about his waist. He really wasn't that big. And the puppet was clearly not a puppet. So to prove it, like to prove to them that I could prove that it wasn't a puppet, I touched it and pulled it forward so that I could prove that there was no hand coming from behind it. And there was none. And that freaked me out. And also when I touched it, like it felt kind of bony, like it felt alive. Like, you know, when you touch something, you know if it's alive. And so that freaked me out and I started screaming. And then I just turned around and started climbing up the steps, which the bottom step came to like my hip. So I was climbing up and I was like banging and banging at the door, screaming and yelling for mom to let me in. And she eventually came to the door and opened it. And she said, how did you get out there? She was freaked out. And she grabbed me by the wrist and yanked me into the kitchen and shut the door. And she locked it. It had one of those sliding locks on the back door. And like, that was odd in itself. I don't know why she did that, but I was glad she did it. And so I was screaming and crying and she kept trying to figure out what was wrong. And I told her there was the friendly giants in the back porch, and which sounds weird. And she kept trying to tell me, no, it's not. You're just dreaming. But she couldn't figure out how I got in the porch. Finally, I got her to open the back door and look. And she did. She opened it really quick and looked and shut it and said, nope, there's nothing there. So she tried to convince me for ages afterwards that that was a dream, but it, like, there was no way it could be. And in my mind, I knew there couldn't be. But over time, I tried to accept that, okay, I was just little, so maybe it was a dream. Even though, you know, years and years and years later, and all these years later, I'm 62 years old, I still remember it. So I've never had dreams that I would remember that long and in that detail.
And I wanted to ask you about different aspects that show up here in that memory. And the first one is, you say you got a loud buzzing in your ears. Have you had that again throughout life? And is it like a warning that something's going to happen?
The only times I've ever had a buzzing in my ears at all is when I was going to faint in my adult life, like when I was pregnant or sick or whatever. The only times I've ever had a buzzing was when I was going to faint. But this, I remember this as being like a much louder buzzing, like it was like I was surrounded by buzzing, and I've never had that before that I recall.
And also you had that thought of, oh no, it's gonna happen again,
right?
But also no memory of it happening before.
No, and that's the odd thing. Like, I'm wondering if maybe at that age I did remember it, but I don't remember it now. Or maybe I didn't remember it, but that buzzing brought that memory back that it was going to happen. I don't know. I just distinctly remember saying, oh no, it's going to happen again. And that's the last thing I remember at that point.
Do you get the impression that perhaps there's been a lot more of this stuff happening throughout your life, but you just don't remember it?
I think so, yes. I mean, I have had instances of missing time, which that was really confusing. So I do think that there's probably more that has happened to me that I don't remember. And I'm kind of okay if I don't remember it, because the stuff I do remember is pretty scary. So yeah, I'm not one of those people that would be willing to be hypnotized to find out, because just the stuff that I do remember, I still sleep with a hallway light on or a bathroom light on at night, because I'm still at my age, afraid of sleeping in the dark.
Yeah, I've heard that from other people who have these experiences. There was a guy I talked to who's 40 years old, and he said he has the light on in the bedroom and he hides under the sheets and he lies there feeling just really scared.
Yep.
And he's 40 years old.
Yep. I don't dare to stay alone. Like, I sometimes joke and say that's the reason why I've been married so long, is I don't dare to live alone.
So this thing, the missing time you had there, where you were by the window with your parents, and then the next thing you know, you're on the porch.
Right.
Was there any kind of blackout or like weirdness? Like maybe you got really dizzy or your sight went a bit weird, or was it just an instant change?
It was just instant. I don't remember anything beyond that loud buzzing and that image in my head of those bubbles. And again, I don't even know what those bubbles signified. Over my life, I thought different times maybe it was some kind of image of like the tree of life or something, or maybe it was cells multiplying, or like, I really have no idea at all.
But you feel they gave that to you for some reason?
I think so. I've never seen it since. Like, I've never had that just spontaneous image in my head of anything like that. So I do remember it being right then. Like, I was up on my tippy toes, and then I got down, turned around, put my hands over my ears, and I heard that loud, loud buzzing and saw that image in my head. And it was there for a while. And I remember, as I was a kid growing up, like, often that image would come back into my mind. Like, I would remember it. It just stuck with me. And I, like I said, I still don't know what it means.
And you say in the book that as soon as you found out that what you were seeing, the character and the puppet, was not real, that you realized they were lying, the demeanor of the giant changed. But it wasn't like they were angry.
It wasn't like they were angry. It was sort of like, it was like they were different. Like, the friendly giant is this friendly character on TV that, you know, as a child I loved. But like, I felt the deception. And once I proved that there was no puppet, that it was not a puppet, I just felt the energy, like, different. It was like, I can't say angry. It was more like frustrated. It felt more like they were frustrated with me because they couldn't trick me. But, you know, for some reason, I've never been the type of person that could be, like, hypnotized, for example. I had my gallbladder out in 2011 or so, and they used that hypnotic drug that makes you think you slept through it, but you really didn't. And because they need you awake so that you can swallow and follow directions. And shortly after that began, I came out of it. Like, something in my brain just prevents me from being, I guess, hypnotized or whatever. And I came out of it, partially through it. And the doctor was freaking out and saying, oh, no, she's coming out of it. We got to give her more. So they gave me more of whatever that drug was. And then I went out. Then I don't remember the rest of that. But I had a friend try to hypnotize me once for a past life regression. I was curious about that in my 20s. And I started to remember something. And I was talking to him in a British accent, actually. And then I came out of it. I just came out of it, like, on my own. So I think that even at 3 years old, while these beings were trying to trick me, or like put some kind of image in my head of seeing something that wasn't there. I think that for some reason my brain just prevented that from happening and they got frustrated.
Well, you then turned around, you started trying to get up the steps. Did right. their disguise dissolve away and you saw them for what they really were or not?
No, well, I saw the puppet, the one pretending to be a puppet. Like, as soon as I got close to him and I call him a him, I guess it was a him, but as soon as I touched him, like, he tried to move forward on his own to sort of, like, go along with what I was trying to do. And, like, I looked at him, and he had these big black eyes. Like, and it was the creatures. It was the same creatures that I saw later in my adult life. And, you know, the big round black eyes, the brown wrinkly skin, like very, they looked very, very ancient. And he also had that hooded robe on that the beings of my adult life had had on. And so it's like I saw him for what he was. But the other being like didn't seem to change it. It wasn't, like it never did do a very good job of being the friendly giant. It was dressed like it or appeared to be dressed like it. And its face kind of was like it, but I don't like that didn't change. Just sort of, I felt the energy change in his attitude or whatever. But the little one that was pretending to be a puppet, and I said in my book, maybe they're just not good at being chickens. I don't know. But it terrified me, that big black eyes. And I turned around and started running for the door. But so I didn't see what happened behind me. But it did surprise me that they didn't try to catch me, because I had the feeling that they would, but they didn't. They didn't move. They didn't try to follow me or grab me. Or they could have disappeared as soon as I turned around. I don't even know.
It's interesting you kind of point out that they tried to get it right, but they just didn't quite understand how to present those images to you. They didn't quite get the giant right, and they definitely didn't get the puppet right.
Yeah, I think, like, I have a theory. Actually, I have millions of theories, but I have a theory that they try to take whatever's in our own heads and become something that is familiar to us so that we don't freak out. And mostly what they do, I'm thinking, is pretend to be, you know, I've heard of other people saying that they saw like clowns or like cartoon characters or whatever. But maybe a puppet is something that, because it's not real, and it is, and the original chicken puppet wasn't very good at looking like a chicken itself. So I just feel like that it just didn't know how to do that one. It was trying to be what it thought I would want to see, and it failed, and I freaked out, and the whole charade, whatever was going on with them, kind of fell apart.
Yeah, you were too clever for them.
I've always wondered if my interactions with those beings, if I did have it all during my childhood, which I think I did, because I also had missing time during my childhood. I would just like become aware of being at the end of my driveway at like 7, 8 years old. And I would have never gone that far from the house by myself, because I was terrified to be outside as a kid. I was terrified of the open sky. I was terrified if a plane went overhead, I would run for the house. I was terrified of anything in the sky, which looking back, that seems kind of weird now. But I never would have gone to the end of the driveway by myself. And it wasn't even that far from the house. It's just that I did not go very far at all. I was terrified, which is unusual looking back for a kid to be terrified to go outside and play. But yeah, I would just suddenly become aware of standing at the end of my driveway. I would have no idea, no memory of going there, no memory of how I got there, just suddenly becoming aware that, oh, I'm at the end of my driveway and realizing it, and that would freak me out. And then I would run for the house.
This is something that shows up so often with people, isn't it? Like some people say they wake up and they're in the garden, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and they're locked out of their house, or they wake up in the wrong room, or they wake up, their pajamas are inside out.
That happened to me once, actually. I woke up once and my pajama shirt, like it was just like a pullover t-shirt type of thing. So it didn't have buttons or anything. And it was actually on inside out. And I thought, And this was back at the time I had the missing time as an adult in and off in my office. And so around that time, I also woke up with my pajama shirt inside out. And I just thought, that's suspicious. Or I was really tired last night and I probably just put it on inside out and didn't notice. Because, I mean, that could happen.
So if we could move on, what happened in May of 2007?
Back in 2007, well, actually for 13 years, I worked as a news monitor, which is I just basically monitored news broadcasts for a company. And so I had to do the 7 and 8 o'clock news in the morning, which were short 5-minute broadcasts and usually copied each other. And then there was a 2-hour talk show that I had to monitor. And to monitor it, I just had to write down summaries of everything that was discussed. So the 2-hour talk show, back in those days, we had to record them on cassette tapes. So I had a 1-hour tape for the first side. And then at exactly 10 o'clock, I would flip it over to the other side to record the second hour. So I had like 6 radios to record all this stuff. And I kept 2 of the ones for the 7 and 8 o'clock news in the bedroom, which was next to my office, so that I just left. They were all set up on timers to automatically come on and record at those specific times. So I kept the volume up on the 8 o'clock one full blast, so that when it came on at 8 o'clock to record, it woke me up and I got up every single morning. And I did this for 13 years and never missed a deadline and never, never was late ever. So at 8 o'clock, the radio went off and it woke me up. I got up and did what I normally do every morning. I put the 1-hour tape in and closed it for the 9 to 11-hour talk show. Took my tapes out, put them on my desk, collected all the other ones that I had to do for the 7 and 8 o'clock news, put them on my desk, and then went to the bathroom and went to the kitchen and started the dishwasher that had been loaded up the night before and went back to my office. And that's what I did every single morning. It took maximum 15 minutes. And then after I would do the 7 and 8 o'clock news, then I would go and get my breakfast and get dressed and then come back. And by then it was time to write up the 11 o'clock, the 2-hour talk show from 9 to 11. So that was my routine every single morning for 13 years. So on that particular morning, I woke up at 8 o'clock when the second broadcast went off, switched the tapes to the 1-hour tape, put the tapes on my desk, went, used the bathroom, got washed, went and started the dishwasher, went back to the office and put my computer on. And so it should have been, at the very latest, it should have been maybe 9 o'clock. Maybe it should have been that late. But I went back and put my computer on and it said 11:30. I was like, well, that's weird. What's wrong with my computer? Like, somehow the time got changed. So I thought maybe the kids were messing with it or something. They were teenagers. And so then I just looked at my watch because I figured I'm just going to reset it. But my watch also said 11:30. I thought, well, that's weird. But why is everything wrong? So I got up and I went to the kitchen to check the kitchen clock. And the kitchen clock said 11:30. So I was like, what is going on? So I went back and thought, okay, like what happened? What is going on? If it's really 11:30, that would mean that the whole first hour of the talk show had recorded, the whole first hour would have recorded of the talk show. And I do not recall flipping it over. So that means that it wouldn't have recorded the second side and it would have shut off at 11. So if it's really 11:30, that radio will be off. And I went and I checked and it was off. It was off and only the first side had been recorded and not flipped over. So I was completely baffled. And meanwhile, I had missed my morning deadline. I was halfway to missing my talk show deadline because that had to be in by noon. And then I had the 12 o'clock broadcasts that I had to record. So, and I couldn't put those tapes back in until I had written up the 7 and 8 o'clock news. So I was just scrambling and confused. And so I called my boss right away and said, okay, the morning news is going to be late. Well, I had already missed my deadline at 10 o'clock for that. I said, I have no idea what happened, but something's wrong. And I missed my deadline. And for some reason, the 2-hour talk show only recorded the first hour. It was true. It was for some reason. I had no idea what reason that was. So I, to this day, have no idea what happened. No idea. Like, when did it happen? Because I have a complete linear memory of walking through the office, walking, going to the bathroom, using the bathroom, going to the kitchen. Like, where would it have happened? If I had been abducted or something, like, when I was halfway walking down the hallway, or I don't understand to this day. I am completely baffled.
That's what this phenomenon does to people, isn't it?
I didn't know if I had some kind of a, like, brain issue or, but again, if I had, there would have been some disruption. Like, if I had some kind of a seizure or something, I'm sure my teenage sons would have discovered me somewhere in the kitchen or the hallway or something, and it wouldn't have been like it was. I don't know. I don't understand.
So I wanted to ask you next about the time you were 5 months pregnant with your second child, mm-hmm. and then something weird happened.
Yes. Okay, I had felt the baby move. I had gone to every single prenatal appointment. The gynecologist heard the baby's heartbeat. Everything was progressing perfectly. I have no idea what happened, but one day I was 5 months pregnant and I was starting to have a little bit of spotting and like a weird little kind of cramp. So I went to my doctor and he said, oh, there's nothing wrong. Everything's normal. But if it gets worse, come back. So I went home and then that night I was just feeling really weird, like just odd. So I told my husband, I might have to go to the hospital, but I don't know. So he went in the bathroom to get washed up and shaved. And while he was in there, I thought, no, I'm just overreacting. Like I feel fine now. Like it stopped. Like I just felt fine. So I went in the bathroom to tell him that I don't think I have to go after all. And then while I was standing there, he just went white as a sheet and said, Elizabeth. And I said, what? Because he freaked me out. And he just pointed and there was like tons of blood coming from me. And then I fainted and I was sitting on the toilet seat, like on the lid. And like I just totally passed out. He got mom to come upstairs. She lived in the apartment below us to come up and babysit the oldest son and called an ambulance. And when I came to, mom was in the bathroom wiping my face with a cold face cloth. And I had been so out of it that I didn't even know who I was. I didn't know my name. I didn't remember being pregnant. I didn't remember that I was married. Like I didn't remember anything. And then, so mom said that my husband was outside because the first ambulance, so I must have been out for a while because he had time to call mom and mom came up. He called an ambulance and the first ambulance got lost. So they had to send a second one. So he went out to the end of the driveway to flag down the second ambulance because apparently they couldn't find our building for some reason. And so they came in and said, we got to do this right here. And I said, no, I need to get to the hospital because I was afraid of losing the baby. I just wanted to go to the hospital. So they wrapped me up in a blanket and carried me down the stairs. And at the hospital, the doctor just took one look at me and said, she's got to go into surgery. So the next morning or afterwards, whenever I came out of the anesthetic, I asked the doctor, so is the baby okay? And he said, no. And I said, what happened? Like, what was wrong? Like, what caused this? And he didn't know. And I said, well, can you at least tell me if it was a girl or a boy? Because, like, I wanted to know. And he said, no, I can't tell you. I said, why? He said, I don't know. I said, why? Like, was it deformed? Like, what do you mean? He said, I don't know. There was nothing there. I said, what do you mean there was nothing there? He said there was nothing there. And he just held up his hands and shook his head and said, there was nothing there. I said, what do you mean nothing? Like, what do you mean? And he couldn't get it through my head that he found nothing. And I couldn't get it through his head that, like, every single doctor's appointment had heard a heartbeat. And I had had an ultrasound, like, previously, at some point previously. And they had seen the baby, but I guess it was too early to tell if it was a girl or a boy or whatever. And the reason why I had had an ultrasound earlier, like in my first trimester, is because I had already had a miscarriage before I had my first son. So, like, I was kind of, and they were kind of, you know, concerned about whether or not that might happen again, I guess. But whatever, I was told that at 5 months, they were going to do another ultrasound. And at that point, I would be able to know if it was a girl or a boy. So when he said there was nothing there, nothing at all, like, he said it just didn't develop. There was no baby there. There was nothing. So I have no idea. Now, I don't know if that has anything to do with beings of other worlds. Like, to me, it just seems so far-fetched. Like, it's so hard for me to believe this. And, like, I don't know. But I know that I have had a couple dreams. I don't know if I put this in the book. I may have put it in and then taken it out because I didn't want to include things that I wasn't at least partially sure of something. But over the last, like, number of years, I did have dreams after that, like, over the course of years, of where these dreams felt very, very different. Like, one dream was I was sitting with my head down and I sort of, like, woke up and I was in this sort of, like, a stadium kind of room, and there was this woman and she had a little girl with her, and she laughed, and the little girl, she was only like 3 or 4, and she pulled her chair really close to me, and I thought, this is weird, you know, like, you really shouldn't be doing that. You really shouldn't be getting close to strangers. That's not good for kids. And she just, like, got really, really close to me and, like, basically sent me a telepathic message, as weird as this sounds, I know, that she was there for me, which was weird. And then I had, like, the next year or sometime, I had another dream where I dreamt, and it wasn't like a dream. It was more vivid, more like realistic. Like, if I didn't know that I woke up from it, I would think that it really happened. So maybe it did. I just, honestly, I have no idea. But in this dream or experience, whatever it was, I sort of became aware that I was in this round white room. And this doctor, but I couldn't see the doctor's face. I just saw his, like, a white coat sort of thing, brought this little girl in and then left. And he shut the door. And this little girl, and the message that I got from the doctor telepathically, and I assume it was a doctor just because I only saw a white coat, anyways, was, she's for you. And so she came in and, like, I don't know. It was like it was my child or something. That sounds weird, I know. But we spent some time together. I don't remember how long, but it seemed like a long time. And she wanted to come home with me. And I wanted her to come home with me, or I didn't want to leave where I was. But there was like nothing in that room. It was just white. And there was sort of like benches, but they were sort of like built right into the wall. It was sort of like something that you might see in a sci-fi movie where it's all like white, shiny, plasticky kind of stuff. And then like a bench sort of like comes right out from the wall as part of the wall. And so we were sitting on that. And then I thought, I'm going to lock that door so that they can't come and take her away. But I didn't know how to lock the door because it was a weird lock type of thing. And she said she could do it. And so she went over and she did it. I don't know how she did it, but she locked the door. And so for a period of time, I had this sense that they couldn't take her away from me. But I also get the sense from her that she knew that they could. And then they did in the end. And I was crying and I didn't want to go. And then after that, like I woke up from it. So I think it was a dream. But enough weird things have happened to me that I honestly can't be certain of anything.
And it's such a specific, weird dream as well. Other people have reported having experiences similar to that.
That's why I was thinking maybe it wasn't a dream, because I've been listening to your podcast ever since you emailed me, actually. And yeah, I've heard other people mention similar things. So I thought, maybe what I experienced wasn't a dream after all. But I don't know.
The aliens that you encounter, is it always these brown hooded short aliens, or do you see the greys as well?
I've never seen a gray that I'm aware of. And I would like to keep it that way. Like if I did, I don't want to know it. But the first time I saw these beings in my adult life, I just woke up in the bedroom. My kids were little at that time. And there was this brown hooded being. He had on like a monk robe. And it looked really old, really like old and worn and dusty-ish. And I can just tell you the whole thing, how it happened. So I woke up and I just felt this heavy weight on me, and my arms were down by my side and I was covered up to my neck. And I have never slept. I never sleep on my back. And I certainly never sleep with my arms down straight by my side, covered up to my neck. That is not a way I normally sleep. And this was, like I say, years ago, my kids were little. And so I opened my eyes and there was this being sitting on top of me. And he had these huge round black eyes, and his face, his skin was brown, and he had like a lot of wrinkles around his eyes and on his forehead and down his cheeks. Like he looked really, really old, really ancient. And he, surprisingly, this was the most surprising part, is his nose looked kind of human. It was just really tiny. And he had lips, like human lips, but it was very, very tiny. And so he was sitting on top of me, and then like I started freaking out. And then I saw, like I turned my head to, because I had a phone on my nightstand and I was going to call my boyfriend at the time. Like basically to come save me because I was freaking out and I couldn't move. I could not move from my neck down. And then I saw there were like four others that came into the room. Like they came through the wall. They just materialized as they were coming through the wall. And they just moved so fast. They zipped like across the bed, and they just moved so fast that like they left a visual trail. Like I could only see them when they stopped. When they were moving, it was like this instant, almost like teleportation, but they clearly were not teleporting because I could see the trail of how they moved. And so there were like four on my bed, and then two got down and started, you know, zipping out into the hallway, leaving this visual trail. heading towards my kids' room. And I really freaked out because I couldn't do anything. I couldn't prevent them from going into my kids' room. And I was really panicking. And the one that was sitting on top of me pulled out a silver wand that was about probably 7 inches long. And it was probably about an inch and a half in diameter. And it was just like the stainless steel. It was silver. That's all I know. And he reached it towards my forehead to touch my forehead. And then I went out. And then when I woke up again, I thought, oh man, that was a terrible nightmare. But then I still felt this weight on me. And I looked and he was still there. And then two more of the ones that had been removed, they also left to go to my kids' room. And it was just so scary. And then the one on my sitting on top of me touched my forehead again with that wand, and I went out again. And then when I woke up from that, I didn't dare to open my eyes because I was afraid that this was not a dream. And I opened my eyes and he was still there. And then he didn't even wait. He just touched my forehead with the wand and I was out. And then when I woke up in the morning, they were all gone. So at the time I called my boyfriend to tell him because I was terrified. And he said, oh, that was just a dream. That's it. I forget what he called it. Yeah, it's like some kind of a nightmare type of thing. But no, it isn't, because that's the same beings that I saw when I was 3. The one that was pretending to be a puppet, that was the exact same being. And then later, when I had kidney failure, do you want me to just go right into that, talking about the kidney failure?
Yeah, that would be great. I've got that on my list.
Okay. So years later, in 2006, my father died. And so during that whole 7-week period that he was dying, I was still doing the news job, which was like a 16-hour job, and had 3 teenage boys, and was driving to the hospital every day to see my father because he was dying of cancer. And so I was not eating very well at all. We were going through the drive-thrus and getting pizza or fast food or whatever, just eating on the way. And that's what we did for like 7 weeks. And my feet were swelling up really, really badly. But I didn't have time to deal with it because there was just no time. And my sister kept saying, you really should go see the doctor. And I said, well, it's just my feet. You know, like I didn't know anything about anything. I just said, well, it's probably nothing serious and I don't have time. So then my father died. And after the funeral, then I figured, well, by that point, it had gotten so bad that my feet were swollen, my legs were swollen. I was swollen up like into my back. So I finally went to the doctor because I was also feeling very, very sick. And they did a blood test and a urine test and everything, and said that the doctor said that I had kidney failure and he wanted to admit me into the hospital right then because he said I needed to have dialysis or a kidney transplant or I was going to die. And this was a Friday afternoon. And I said, well, I can't go into the hospital right now. Like, I had news to do. And I had kids at home, like teenagers, but it's not like I'm just going to go to the doctor and just not come back. So I said, well, let me go home. And if I'm not any better by Monday, I'll come back. He said, no, you need to go into the hospital now. Like right now, go from here right to the hospital. You need to have dialysis. So I was also naive. Like I just, I'll be okay until Monday. But I said, well, I'm just going to go home and pray about it. And I will come back on Monday. I promise I will come back on Monday. And then I'll have dialysis. I'll do whatever. I just need to go home right now. So he didn't approve of it, but he let me go home. And I just contacted every single person I knew and got them all to pray for me or visualize for me or send good thoughts or however they connected to whatever source of healing. Just do your thing. Do your own thing, however you do it, however you connect. just send some healing thoughts my way, you know? And I was too. And I was fully prepared that on Monday I would go back. And I fully expected I would have to have dialysis. But I went to bed that night on Friday. And then very shortly after I went to bed, I like was startled awake by a movement on my bed. And I thought it was the cat. And I looked at it wasn't the cat. It was that being. It was the being with the big black eyes and the brown hooded robe and the wrinkles. And it was so traumatizing because they look scary. They just look scary. And not to mention, you know, the total invasion of my home, you know, with locked doors. But so I was just freaking out. And then I saw two more come in, like down through the ceiling and materialize as they hit the bed and then zipped to the foot of my bed. And then two more came in, like through the window. But the one that was sitting right by my shoulder, like stayed right by my shoulder and just kept staring at me. So I don't know whether his staring had some sort of like hypnotic effect or something that paralyzed me. Like, I don't know, but I wasn't really paralyzed from the neck down, but I couldn't move from the neck down, but I could feel everything. So the four other beings, they rolled me onto my side, and then they started making this weird sound. It sort of sounded like a whale sound, like those sort of like echoey sounds. But it was like rising and falling sounds. Like I would try to do it for you, but I can't. And then they put their hands inside of me, like two were sitting in front of me and two were behind me. And they just like pushed their fingers inside my skin, like in my abdomen and in my back. And then they started like squeezing and massaging my kidneys. And I knew that's what they were doing. And it just felt like knives going through my skin. So I was freaking out and I was trying to scream, but nothing would come out. And the one that was sitting beside me, just somehow, I just had to keep staring at it, staring in his eyes. And like, it just terrified me because like I can't describe it other than I was terrified. These beings looked scary. Like their eyes, they just were just so black. It's not like they had a pupil that, you know, that you could tell where they were looking. Like with the person, you can see if their eyes look over here or over there. But with these, it's just like such solid black. It just made it so impersonal and just terrifying.
They gave you this great healing, didn't they?
Yeah. So what happened was they seemed to be really methodical about it. Like, they didn't care that I was scared. I never felt any compassion from them at all. But they just kept massaging my kidneys. And then it just got so painful, I passed out. And then when I came to, they would stop. They were just standing there or sitting there, whatever, just looking at me. All four of them that were doing the massaging, all four of them just were looking at me. And then when I was alert again, they just resumed. They started making these weird sounds and then put their fingers back to my skin and massage my kidneys again. And this happened like 5 or 6 times, maybe 10. Like, it just happened a lot. And I just kept passing out. And then it was like they kept waiting until I was conscious again before continuing. And I don't know whether they were giving me like a break, a rest. I kind of felt like they were. But at the same time, I also had the feeling that this was an assignment, sort of. Like, I felt like this was just a task. Like, they had to do this. They were doing this, whether I liked it or not. And then they were just going to go off and do something similar to someone else. It was sort of like I was just one of many stops they had that night. That's just the impression that I got. And so actually at that time, while I was looking at the one that was sitting by my shoulder, like, I was just wondering, like, what are you? Like, what are these? Where did they come from? And then I suddenly had this message in my head that they've always been here. They didn't come from anywhere. They've always been with man. And then I had like this image in my head, like that I feel like they put in my head, of an ancient jungle with ancient man. And like, I had this vision of like going through a jungle and seeing like a volcano, not an active volcano, but it was just like a volcano in the distance. And I just knew that this was an ancient time and that these beings have always been with man. So then I was thinking, oh, so they're immortal. And then I got the message, no, not immortal. They just are very, very old, very, very ancient. They live for thousands of years, but they are not immortal. That's the message that I got. And those are basically the only two things they ever told me, is that they've always been with us and they're very, very old, but not immortal. So that was on a Saturday, like a Friday night into Saturday morning that this all happened. And then on Saturday morning, when I got up, I was able to just go to the bathroom normally. And I hadn't been able to have any like urine at all for like a week. I was so swollen and bloated from all the toxins building up. And the next morning I was able to go to the bathroom, and over the weekend, all those fluids drained. They started draining. And then on Monday I had another blood test. And then on Tuesday I had my doctor's appointment again. And he said, I didn't need dialysis. And I said, so how are my tests? He said, your kidneys are fine. I have no idea what happened, but your kidneys are working. And I said, well, on Friday, you told me that once a person loses a significant percent of kidney function, and I had complete failure, I said, you said that you can't get that back, that once you lose kidney function, you can't get that back. He said, well, I was wrong. I have no idea what happened. And I did not tell him. I didn't tell him that beings healed me. And I certainly didn't tell him that aliens healed me. And I didn't feel comfortable calling them aliens, because I didn't feel like they came from another planet. Whereas, you know, growing up, you know, movies about aliens or whatever, they always were aliens from another planet. But I never felt at all that they came from another planet, just that they came from another dimension. So when I told my sister that I got healed, I just told her angels healed me. Because in reality, angels in the Bible are described many different ways, and some of them are scary. So they could have been angels. I don't know. Like, I don't know what they were, but I know that it was terrifying, very traumatic for me.
I wanted to ask about how their telepathy works. Was it just like you're hearing words like a sentence, or was it something else?
No, that's the weird thing. Every time I've ever heard of people saying that, anything about telepathy, I always thought it was exactly like a verbal communication, except just in your head. Like that I would say a sentence and someone else would say a sentence, but it's not like that. It's like you know what they know. They let you have it's sort of like sharing a mind. Like I just knew it. I had the knowledge. It was sort of like a download of information and this vision. Like I could see it. I could see, it was like I had a memory. It was like I had a memory that was their memory, but I could see it in my head as a memory. It was just, definitely not English verbal silent dialogue.
And also I read in your book that your husband and his siblings, when they were young, they saw these robed beings.
Yes. And which is one of the reasons why I married him, is he believed me. But when they were kids, he said often, very often, they would see these hooded beings run past the windows just really, really fast. And they would always run out to catch them because they used to think at first that it was the neighbor kids just playing pranks on them, but there was never anyone out there. So then what they would do after a while, there was like six kids altogether, they would break up so that some of them were by one door, some of them were by another. And then as soon as somebody would see one, they would yell, and then everybody would run outside around the house in different directions. And they never ever saw anybody. They never caught anybody. So, but he did see the hooded beings. He just said that, like, because they ran so fast, like, he didn't see their face. It was just dark under the hoods.
Well, it's been great talking to you. The book's called Strange UFOs and Aliens in My Life. And people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Yep, they can get it on Amazon and probably, like, on other retailers as well. It's out in paperback and also in ebook. And also, it's for sale directly as an ebook on havenstreetpublishing.com.
And you have plans for another book?
Yes, I'm going to write a book about my near-death experiences, but that also is going to be a thin book because I haven't had that many of them. But so I'm also going to include like other strange anomalies. Like, I've seen a ghost, and I've seen an angel, which I also put in this book, actually. But actually, thinking back about that, that angel that I saw could have just been another one of those beings trying to be something else. You know, I don't know.
Okay, well, great. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Simon. And it's been really a pleasure talking to you. I was so nervous at first. Thank you so much.
And that was an interview with E.A. Sabine about her book, Strange UFOs and Aliens in My Life. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.